What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived and it's just in time.
Welcome back to an episode of America Trends that you really have to hear. John and I, I'm Larry Rifkin, and he's John Krofcik. John?
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear this.
Well, you and I were both really, really impacted by the interview that we're about to bring you. Don't go anywhere. Don't change that dial. That's not even relevant any longer, is it?
That's true.
Don't go to another podcast. Yeah, right. Please, we are worth your time. Honest to goodness. John and I came into this saying, I wonder what this interview really is going to be like. And we left it where both of us were feeling so guilty about our lifestyles that we were about ready to change, but we're just almost incapable of doing that at this stage and age of life.
Yeah, changing lifestyle. It's been hard. I've been trying to do it and I've been working on it, and it's really hard to change your lifestyle because everything that you like is all around you.
You don't want to discard everything, John. I mean, you don't want to get up one day and say, the wife, out, the dog, gone, the home,
I'm talking about food.
Oh, you're talking about food. Well, I'm saying that, I could see where somebody wakes up one day. Maybe this is the beginning of a really bad short story and wants to change everything at once, gets in a car and just takes off, and there you go. Your life is in the rearview mirror, John. Hey, maybe I'll write a song. My life in a rearview mirror. I get ideas for songs from everything. But I didn't really get a song out of this, but I got some real worrisome thoughts. First of all, there's a letter in our paper today, in our local paper, where somebody said, well, if we really want to deal with climate change, then we better start eating very differently.
Absolutely.
And so I'm reading on, and I said, I get the argument now because of what we taped. And the fact that we raise cattle and we raise chickens
and we eat a lot of
eggs and dairy products really
methane
heats up.
Gas.
Right. Pardon me? Yes.
You know, that evil methane gas.
Woo! What was that, John? I didn't know. Are you warning me? Anyway, but that really does have an impact on
the
climate.
We got to give up beans, too.
Yeah, the beans. No, beans are still good for you, I think. But honest to goodness, we actually taped the interview that we are talking about during something that was called World Meat Free Week. And I think about this because, John, I had on this ethicist from Princeton University, and I asked him at one point to look forward 50 years and look back on us as a civilization. At what is it that they're going to look upon as being almost untenable behavior? And he said clearly, without reservation, the fact that we eat meat is something that they will look upon in 50 years, let's say even 100 years, and say, those barbarians in 2018, how did they do that? That's what he said.
I don't know what to say about that, except I've seen a few documentaries on meat, and we're so disconnected from where we come from, and it is very barbaric how we treat animals.
I know where the meat comes from. Comes from that aisle on the right side of the supermarket.
That's what we think,
right?
Before it gets there.
There's a place before it gets there.
Oh.
No, I know. You've talked about this pretty passionately, John. You've seen these documentaries on slaughterhouses. Tell us, seriously, what should we learn from that?
Well, it's horrible the way we treat the animals. And we put it in the back of our mind. And like I said, we're so separated from it that we don't realize it. But I don't know how these people work under the conditions they do and the things they do to animals. It's horrible.
And of course, we've talked about antibiotics and the fact that we bulk them up so much they can't even naturally procreate. they have to artificially inseminate.
Not to mention because, what those antibiotics are doing to us.
Thank you. And we did a podcast on that, of course. No, we really try to cover the gamut if we can. Well, we met Renee King Sonnen, and she's a native Houstonian, so she's from Houston. She is the executive director and founder of something called Rowdy Girl Sanctuary in Angleton, Texas, and she is married to a gentleman who is a multi-generational cattle rancher. But she changed her evil ways back several years ago, and we asked her all about that and how she did it. And she is a compelling presenter on this topic.
She's funny, too, as I remember it. She's very funny.
Absolutely. And she really gave us a new way of thinking. And, John, I haven't been able, I'm going to be really honest with anybody who's listening, I haven't been able to change all my ways. I don't eat a lot of red meat, but I do, you know, eat chicken. Fish, I think, is still generally considered okay. But, it's hard. It's hard to go to all plant-based for me. But she's going to tell us about clean meat. There's a whole new movement where we're not killing anything, but we're growing things. So there's a lot out there, even with the technology, that may lead us to a different place.
Well, even fish, there's a problem with. If you get these fish that are, I forget what they're called, they're not wild caught, they're farmed fish.
Oh, farmed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They feed the fish corn. So, of course, what they eat relates to what they are. And if they're eating this GMO corn, then...
Well, not only that, and they mislabel fish. You don't really know what you're getting. If somebody is going to a supermarket and they think it's scrod, it could be any one of... Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. Well, listen, lots of problems here, and we're going to address them on this America Trends.
On the line with us on America Trends is Renee King Sonnen. She is a native of Houston and the executive director and founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary in Angleton, Texas. What is Rowdy Girl Sanctuary?
Rowdy Girl Sanctuary is a former beef cattle ranch in Texas that used to raise cows, and we would sell the baby calves to sell barns, and they would eventually go to feedlots where they would be sold and slaughtered. So we used to be a beef cattle ranch, and now we are a vegan farm sanctuary. And I just like to put it like, you know, instead of killing animals, we now save and rescue animals.
Interesting. How did that evolution come about?
It was indeed an evolution, for sure. It took me about 4 years of living here with my husband before I was able to have the courage to actually confront him, because I was married to a cattle rancher, and we were married for the second time. Well, the second time that we got married, he had already bought this cattle ranch. The first time we were married, he didn't own the cattle ranch. So when I moved in with him here, I really didn't pay much attention to the cows because, you know, most people don't even pay attention to them. They're just there. And it's not something we are taught to do. We're not really taught to, you know, really love and pay attention to the food, you know, the animals that we eat, because they're considered food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so who wants to, you know, be cuddly and lovable with an animal that you're eating? Nobody does that, you know. So not really. And so what happened is I began to have a relationship with these animals that was beyond anything I ever expected. And I got a cow, a little baby. Her name was Rowdy Girl. And I started bottle feeding her. And when I did, I started observing the other cows, the community of the cows, and really seeing with my own eyes and feeling with my own heart that they have a very rich, emotional, sentient life that is deserving of our respect. And killing them is very, very unnecessary and violent.
What about convincing your husband of that?
Finally went vegan after 4 years, and being married to a cattle rancher, that wasn't very popular. I wasn't the most popular person, not in my whole family. I was really, really ridiculed by everyone when it first happened, and my husband and I were getting in fights all the time, and I was calling him a murderer, and he was telling me how stupid I was and how I needed to know how to understand this way of life and that I needed to, you know, stop doing what I was doing to him. Mm-hmm. He thought I was doing something to him when, you know, blocking him from selling the cows and stuff. He didn't like it. He didn't like it one bit. After a while, he started watching the documentaries that I advised him to watch, Cowspiracy and Forks Over Knives and Food Matters and documentaries like that. And he started seeing with his own eyes that it was a good thing to do, not really for the ethical stance that I had, but for health reasons.
Interesting. So people come at this for different reasons. I will tell you, yeah. Renee, that a couple of years ago I talked to an ethicist, and I asked him, I think he was from a major university, now I'm forgetting if it was Johns Hopkins or another like that, and I asked him, 50 years down the road, if we look back at our society, what is it that people will shake their heads at and wonder, how did they do this? And he said it would be eating meat, that is what we would look back upon and really frown and shake our heads like we do today about smoking and other things that used to be so in vogue and now are almost taboo.
Yeah, and it's very true. I've said the very thing. That's the one thing that we'll look back on in our history and wonder how in the world we ever participated in that. I mean, the very word slaughterhouse does not, you know, invoke a very nice picture. It's a house of slaughter, a house of death. And no one wants to take their children on a field trip there. No one even wants to go there. In fact, most people, when they're shown the way these animals die, they want to close their eyes, but they don't mind eating the dead animal. You know, we've got to start making a turn in our consciousness because we all share this same planet, and this planet is suffering exponentially due to the impact of animal agriculture on our Earth. We can't keep doing what we're doing. We're ravaging our planet we're growing all this grain. 70% of the grain that's grown in the world today goes to feed livestock that is killed for food. That's just not okay. That's very unsustainable to think that kids are starving all over the world while 70% of our grains go to feed animals that we're raising for food. They're eating our food and then we're eating them, and while children are starving all over the world.
How do you explain the fact that as much as, you know, we're talking about 50 years down the road, how we'll look back at this chapter in our history and our devouring of meat of all sorts, that global meat production and consumption have increased rapidly in the recent decades? How do you explain that?
Well, because we actually have a animal agriculture media mecca complex. The money that is in the power and the politics around animal agriculture is astounding. At the same time that it's picking up, like you just said, and it is, veganism is also picking up. I mean, veganism, the awareness of animal rights, animal activists getting, you know, arrested for going into slaughterhouses and taking animals out in broad daylight. Direct Action Everywhere is doing that. It's called Open Rescue. There are six activists right now that are, you know, going to be standing trial and facing, you know, like possibly 60 years in prison for taking little piglets out of a slaughterhouse that were dying, and they took them to the vet to get vet care. And they're so, you know, at the same time that this is happening, animal rights is just burgeoning. Veganism is burgeoning. And the reason why is because, you know, people are beginning to see that we have to. And so animal ag is doing everything they can. They're spending the money doing everything they can to fight it, you know, and in the whole impact of the animal export trade. You know, that is, you know, that is really picking up. I mean, animal export, so there's more animals being killed and slaughtered as a result of that, and that's just horrible.
Well, if there are countries that are just getting wealthier and out of third world status, are they among those eating more meat than ever before? And by the way, when we talk about meat, I mean, we are talking about pork, we are talking about beef, and we are talking about chickens and poultry. What else are we talking about, or have I missed something?
Well, there's turkeys, you know, and the consumption
mutton.
Of dogs is really picking up.
Well, and I saw that in China recently. So, I mean, are we at the end of that curve where America's beginning to pull back a little bit? Veganism is coming into vogue, and yet in many of these developing nations, meat consumption is growing. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes, I am seeing that. But at the same time that we're seeing that, right now, this month, there is 60 billboards up in Los Angeles that say dairy is scary, and it directs them to a YouTube video by Erin Janis. Dairy is scary. 60 bold billboards in Los Angeles right now. You know, we didn't used to see billboards like that. They're going up everywhere now. The public, there's just like there's money in animal agriculture, there's a lot of money now that is being, you know, sunk into the plant-based meat companies like Beyond Meat and Gardein and Miyoko's cheese. You know, there's so much plant-based foods now that you can eat that mimic the taste, the texture, the quality of eating, you know, the animals that people are used to eating.
Yeah. Well, let me back up a little bit, Renee, because we were talking about slaughtering animals for meat consumption. But what about the dairy process that we're talking about? How does that relate to the slaughtering process? Because many people would like to continue eating a lot of vegetables and fruits, but they also want to continue eating or having dairy and having milk and so forth. How do you equate those?
Dairy is really worse than the beef industry.
And really?
I mean, because, and see, this is what the animal agriculture doesn't want you to know. They don't want you to know that dairy is indicative of taking babies away from their mothers. When you take babies away from their mothers, you perform one of the most egregious acts. These animals want to be with their children. They're so nurturing with their children. The dairy industry has to take their babies away from them and keep them pregnant, not just pregnant, but they have to, you know, virtually rape these mother cows. They have to inseminate. They call it artificial insemination.
No, I know, and I've heard about this process where now, even with the use of antibiotics and the steroidal impact of various of the things that are used, that you cannot even impregnate various farm animals in a traditional manner. It's got to be done artificially.
It has to be done artificially, and it's very brutal. You know, the arm of a man or a woman has to go all the way up in the anus of the cow to deliver the sperm, which, by the way, is artificially collected from the bull. You know, a bull has to literally be, you know, I don't even know what word to use without sounding crass.
Yeah,
but
no,
they have to, you know, to be artificially ejaculated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I've read that too. So the question is, I mean, what is it that is getting through to the American public and publics around the world? Is it the environmental impacts that are great, the ethical concerns about the treatment of animals, of the health considerations of consuming some of this product? What message is most getting through?
Well, I think the biggest message for mainstream humanity is the health and the environment. But when people make the turn for the ethical reasons, they never, ever go back. I mean, like, there is no way I would ever, ever consider eating animals or milk or cheese or any of that ever again from an animal. I would never do that. You know, sometimes when people go vegan for their health or for the environment, they may have an egg here and there, or, you know, it's not as big of a deal. But when you go vegan for the animals, there's no going back, because you know, you can't unknow the truth. And we are being lied to. Every minute of the day, money is being spent to keep humans in the dark pertaining to animal agriculture. It's because if we knew about all these slaughterhouses and the cesspools of where all the urine, the feces, the blood, you know, the death pits, you know, all the animals that suffer in these slaughterhouses, and, you know, needlessly, you know, some of them just put in a dead pile somewhere just to die because they're not worth being slaughtered. You know, it's what's going on is going on out of our sight, and they're paying to have that, to make that a reality. Except now, because of social media, it's being exposed. Animal activists are going into these slaughterhouses. There was over 1,000 animal activists that marched at the Animal Liberation Conference in San Francisco a couple of months ago, and I was there, and it was amazing. And over 500 activists were at a slaughterhouse also in California, and, you know, took out many, many birds out of there, out of that facility in broad daylight.
Are there...
This is happening. Yeah.
Are there any efforts to make the way that animals are prepared, if you will, for death and for consumption more humane, or is there just no way to, as you say, unsee what we see and what the end result is, even if you have a more clean and sterile environment? You know, are there any practices that might be less disgraceful than the ones you were talking about?
Well, there's the clean meat scene. You know, the clean meat scene is where they're actually taking, you know, the cells out of the baby calf, like the baby, like the embryos, mm-hmm. and they're putting them in petri dishes, and they're growing meat. So they're actually growing chicken breasts. They're growing, you know, whatever they want to grow, and no animal had to be harvested for that to happen.
So is that a growing industry too, or no?
Oh, yeah, clean meat is a growing industry. And I think it's a great industry for pet food, because some cats and stuff like that. I mean, albeit our dogs are all vegan. Our dogs eat vegan dog food. Our cats still don't. But there is, you know, some food now that I'm hearing that even cats can eat and be healthy. So, you know, we're trying to figure it out. But if, you know, a lot of people that eat a meat-rich diet with the clean meat scene coming on the horizon, and it's supposed to, like, happen by next year.
Wait, what's supposed to happen by next year?
The clean meat scene, you know, the clean meat is supposed to be on the market.
Oh, okay.
By next year.
What about other forms of protein? I mean, what's your diet like, for example? Give us a sense of what a day in Renee King Sonnen's life is like in terms of food.
Well, this morning I had a bagel with Miyoko cheese on it. It was a sun-dried tomato cheese on my bagel. That was my breakfast. And I made a big pot of spaghetti and meatballs yesterday, and the meatballs are Gardein meatballs, plant-based, and you can't even tell the difference, except they're not greasy, you know, and they taste wonderful. There's that. I mean, I love my Raisin Bran with berries in it and bananas, and almond butter is always a good staple of mine on crackers. I love them. And I had macaroni and cheese last night from Amy's.
Renee, I hate to say this. You may not be eating the healthiest diet, but let me ask you, what about in Texas? I mean, there you are in Texas. And, I mean, people must go out for steakhouses and everything. I mean, how much do you lecture folks about what it is that concerns you and many of us about the animal industry today in terms of the harvesting? Are you prone to lecture? What happens?
I speak all over the country, and in this year I'm going to be speaking in Canada. So I go all over the country speaking on animal rights, our story of conversion from a beef cattle ranch to a vegan farm sanctuary. And actually, the food I eat is very healthy. It doesn't have any cholesterol in it. It doesn't have the grease in it. And vegan cheese is made out of cashews.
Oh, okay.
And so unless you know what the food's made of, I mean, everything I eat, you can read the ingredients.
Well, you know, when you said mac and cheese. Let me ask you about protein overall. I mean, do you worry about getting enough protein in your diet? I think that's something that certain people who might say, I can't really take myself away from meats and get enough protein. What do you say?
Hello?
What does your doctor say?
again, animal agriculture has a lot of money, and they have put a lot of money into making sure that we think that protein comes from dead animal flesh, the hacked up dead animal pieces, that's where protein comes from. When the cows eat grass, that's all they eat. They get all their protein from grass. And then we are taught that we got to get protein from dead animals. If that isn't a bill of goods that just completely false, that is not where we have to get our protein. Gorillas, you know, I mean, big, huge. I mean, there's bodybuilders today. The strongest man in the world is vegan. You know, it's a misnomer that you have to get protein from dead animals. It's just not a fact. In fact, you don't even need near the amount of protein as we're told that we need, because you get your protein, it's really the amino acids that we need. And so when you are putting your food together, you know, if you just, I mean, if you eat any salad, you're getting protein. If you eat a bagel, you're getting protein. If you're eating the vegan cheese, you're getting protein. But it's not, you know, all about the protein.
And how important in a lot of the conversations that you had early on about all of this was the notion of antibiotic resistance? That's becoming just a tremendous problem for animals and humans.
Yes, because I forget the statistic regarding the antibiotics that are given to livestock, but it's a huge amount of antibiotics that are given to livestock versus what's given to humans. So what we're consuming is not only the dead animal flesh, but all of the antibiotics that they had to take so that they wouldn't get the diseases and whatnot that they would get otherwise. And so we're becoming very antibiotic resistant. It's a big problem, and it's scary.
As somebody who talks around the country and the nation, I mean the world, are there any countries that are way ahead in terms of their awareness of what it is that you're talking about, and where the government is really stepping in on the side of a different kind of lifestyle? Can you name any place in the world where we might find that?
I can't name a place in the world where the government is behind veganism, but it's starting to change. All I know is that the landscape is starting to change. There is a 50% of all of our wild species, our wild vertebrate species, are extinct. 50%, not 5%, 50. Mm. And if we keep going at the same rate, the same trajectory that we're going right now, by 2026, 8 years from now, there will be none left. So we are in a crisis. We have to start looking at what we're doing and not tiptoe through the tulips. We have to make changes. We have to, you know, and so there's a big movement to create a vegan world by 2026. And there's a website you can go to, it's called Climate Healers. Mm-hmm. And there's a doctor by the name of Salish Raoul. He's a scientist, and he was one of the ones that actually developed the internet back in the day before it was all getting when it was all getting started. And he's a systems guy, and he has figured out that if we don't do something, you know, it's going to be bad news for us all by 2026. And so
that's only 8 years. That's 8 years. Wow.
Yeah, and we are beyond the tipping point. Our world has. I mean, humans are a virus on this planet. We've got to see that we have been a big problem, and it's up to us to be the solutions. We've got the ability to do great things, and we have the ability to be very destructive. And so it's up to us to see what we've been doing and to make the changes necessary.
And what about climate change in all of this?
Well, climate change is very real to us here. We have had to evacuate 2 years in a row, last year because of Hurricane Harvey, and the year before that because of massive flooding that came downstream, flooded the Brazos River and us. 2 years ago, it was a 100-year flood event. Last year, it was a 500-year flood event. We've had to evacuate. You know, last year was 96 animals plus all of us. It's scary when you know that you are refugees of climate change, and we are. You know, we're looking for higher ground, and we are convinced that climate change is real, because when you, I mean, a 500-year flood event last year, and before that, a year before, a 100-year flood event, 2 years in a row. And when you look at what's happening in Antarctica, in the polar ice caps, all of the ice, you know,
that yes,
melting,
we did a podcast on that that people can go back to. Well, listen, a really interesting conversation and one that I don't think gets out into mainstream circles enough. Renee King Sonnen, and she is the founder of Rowdy Girls Sanctuary. If people want to read more and understand more about this issue, can you direct us in that fashion?
Sure. RowdyGirlsSanctuary.org is our website, and I recommend going to climatehealers.org too if you want to know more about climate change.
Thank you so much, Renee. Very interesting conversation.